This is the 919 Beer Podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Now, here are your hosts for the 919 Beer Podcast, Joe Ovius, Adam Eschbaugh, and Wayne Holt.
It's the 919 Beer Podcast. Joe Ovius from 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh, North Carolina. Adam Eschbaugh from 919 Beer. And we're sponsored, thanks to our friends over at House of Hops. They've got three locations, two in Raleigh, one out in Pittsburgh. There's one location right here by the radio station, which I will frequent from time to time. They got 24 beers on tap. They got over 400 bottles and cans. You can pick up these individual cans, too. And, of course, online ordering is available for home delivery, curbside pickup, in-store pickup, too. And you can actually find our guest at House of Hops. It is Hop Fly out of Rocky Mount. Cam Scholes hanging out with us again. It's been a while, Cam, since we chatted.
Been a little while, yeah. Yeah. It's been maybe,
was it a year? Was it before times?
Before times. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, just wondering.
He and I hung out in the summer at Rocky Mount, but it wasn't for the podcast.
Okay, gotcha. Quick, because I always feel like I have to do this, like the whole
full disclosure thing.
Anytime we talk about something that comes out of Rocky Mount Mills, that is a Capital Broadcasting adventure. Not a venture, it's an adventure. When you go out to Rocky Mountain Mills, it's true. They got a wiffle ball field. You can go find, you get on the Tar River. You can all sorts of fun
stuff. Stay at River Entwine.
Yeah, you can stay in the Tiny House Hotel. It's an adventure, Adam.
And you can come to Hop Fly. Don't forget that, guys. Come on.
That's the most important.
Come to Hop Fly's new tap room.
Yes.
I think the last time we talked, you were getting ready to open the tap room.
We were.
And that was really unfortunate timing.
Yeah, we had the great misfortune of opening. We were open for 9 business days before we shut down. And when I say business days, I mean 9, like I guess calendar days.
Yeah.
I think 4 days of business in there. So, you know, we had this hilarious ramp up last spring, January, February, between festivals and collaboration beers and building out the tap room and trying to get that ready. And we're like making tables and chairs ourselves and like just, you know, we turned into a paint crew for 48 hours straight at one period. You know, we were just all jacked up, and it kind of culminated in this one incredible grand opening. And then, you know, 2 days later, that Monday, I finally took a day off. I went fishing. I was out there on the river, and I was like, oh, wow. I was like, the world's about to stop. I was like, well, this was a fun weekend.
Looks like I'm
going to
get good at fishing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, but, you know, it's been fine because we, you know, the whole pandemic has allowed us to look in the mirror and focus on the product and focus on the branding and just kind of work on us and lean up a little bit. And we're excited, you know, coming out of this, maybe a year after the taproom opening, things will start to pick up again and people can really experience it the way that we designed it.
Now, so about that taproom, I feel like people who might not be familiar with Rocky Mount Mills and how you guys got started and the whole beer incubator concept that you emerged from. So you've been doing your thing. And then you decided to stay there? Is that how this all kind of played out? Because, I mean, you grow, you get a little bigger, and then you decide to go do something else. That was the whole point of the incubator process. So you decided this is a good enough – you wanted to stay there.
Yeah, yeah, totally. We, you know, the whole incubator concept initially was sort of a 3-year term.
Yeah.
And we realized that, you know, the lead time on getting into a brewery, building something out, as you guys know and as I knew, you know, that could be a 2-to-3-year process as it is. So, you know, it's taken us a couple years to really get our feet under us. And we just, you know, we love Rocky Mount. That's our home right now. And we wanted to build out something that would really be a lasting structure for us there.
So where is it in the facility now?
So we, our original little incubator space was about 700 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
So we've kind of doubled that up. We've got additional canning space. And then we were able to build this tap room directly adjacent to our primary production facility. It's literally 15 feet away. So it's, you know, different address, some complexity with that, but for all intents and purposes, it's a connected facility, which is really incredible. So, you know, you can take 2 steps down from the tap room and you're right there looking at our production facility.
And it's a really, really nice tap room experience. Even, I guess we were there in July, even with restrictions, maybe because of restrictions, like we had a lot of room, but even with restrictions, I mean, you don't want a lot of room in a tap room. You want people jammed in there, but it's a great space. You guys did a nice job with this, very clean and just a nice feel when you're walking in there. And you got a bunch of, right now, I know it's not optimal because you guys have been serving out of plastic, just trying to, you know, because of what we're going through. But when we're back to normal, and you're using glass, you got really cool glassware that you're using there. You've got some side pull taps for your lagers, which is a lot of fun. And I'm excited to come out there when we can just come out and
totally,
you know, have a good afternoon without having to stay 6 feet apart.
And yeah, 100%. We are. Yeah, we're so excited to show people the experience that we have always wanted to build. And as you guys might know, before we built out this tap room, I mean, we were serving beer out of this little 700 square foot brewery. I mean, we were in the corner that, you know, no HVAC. Yeah. It's hot. It's humid. You know, it's gross, but it's cool. Like, we did what we had to do.
Yeah.
And our goal with that tap room was just really to build a space and an experience that matched the level, you know, of attention to detail and quality that we try to put into our product. We needed to build out that full experience. Like, you know, like every brewery tries to do that, but sure, that was really important for us because we, you know, we were grinding away for 2 years and we didn't have that really customer facing piece of it. So yeah, we had, you know, 9 days of it and then the pandemic, but we're certainly stoked to get folks back in.
You brought somebody to hang out with us today, Paul.
Yeah, Paul. I've got Paul here. Paul's I could let him do the intro, but he's our cold side, genius. He runs packaging for us and really just kind of front to back end.
Okay.
Has a lot of say in every single beer that we throw out. So I'll throw it over to him.
A cold side genius. That's high praise.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that I would accept genius, but, I enjoy my job and, you know, I try to just focus on making the best beer that we can from as soon as it hits that fermenter. And when it goes in the can, I'm right there with it.
So, In the, I guess, in brewery speak, right? You'd be cellar person.
Yep, I'd be cellarman, right? Or
and explain what that tech. Explain what that means.
So you're in charge of fermentation and adjuncting, dry hopping, conditioning the beer, getting it ready for package, and then I also have the packaging tech role of putting it in the can.
Yeah, so that's a very important job. I think if people don't know really how a brewery operates, they just think brewer and that's it. There are specified roles, and, you know, the brewer is what we call on the hot side. Cellarman works on the cellar side, on the cold side, all that fermentation, which is very important because if you have some problems in fermentation, you're going to have a lot of problems with your beer. Totally. How long have you been with Hopfly?
It'll be 2 years, I think, at the end of this month, yeah.
Gotcha. And Cam, I can't remember. Do you guys have your own canning line, or are you using... What are you using for packaging?
Yeah, so we have our own line out there at the mills, and that's a shared piece of equipment. So a couple of the other folks out there, and they're kicking off an alternating proprietorship system. So we've got Barrel Cultures out there, Crystal Coast is out there, and a couple
is
other folks will be in there soon.
Portable?
No,
or
so
it's locked in, and you got to run your hoses to it.
Run your hoses to
okay.
it.
Okay.
So yeah, we have some long runs, but
How far of a run is that?
I think Capital got out of that game, right? When we sold
Bull
Durham.
Yeah.
I think the whole point of Rocky Mount, a little behind the scenes stuff, because Bull Durham.
Full disclosure
time. Bull Durham beer ended up being sold to R&D. They're still doing all the Bull Durham stuff, and they're still making the beer at the ballpark. But as Capital Broadcasting found out real quick, this is an interesting business, and maybe we'll let other people do it. But we invested in all that equipment out there, right?
Yep.
Okay, so now it's all just shared for everybody, right?
Shared for everyone else. Okay. So it's been a really cool, I mean, it's been cool to see. We were kind of the first folks in that facility who really ramped up and got cranking, but it's been really cool over the last year to see other guys come in and, you know, it adds some complexity to the scheduling of it,
sure.
But you know, on any given week, you know, there's
do you have
three...
like a sign up genius or something like that?
Yeah.
Is
well,
that how that works?
We got,
what are you?
We have some online, fancy Basecamp. It's called Basecamp.
Yeah. We use Basecamp.
Yeah. Okay. Basecamp is neat. So we use Basecamp for scheduling,
gotcha.
but you know, it's been cool seeing that facility kind of fill up and get some other like-minded folks in there. And yeah, outside of some of the scheduling, it's been really nice to have some head full.
I'm sitting here thinking it's like the summer pool sign up in my neighborhood pool where everybody would rush to
pretty
the
much
sign
what
up
it
genius.
Is. Except there's a whole lot more cleanup involved.
Oh yeah, that's true. That is true.
So let's talk fermentation. Last week we had hand that over to Paul.
It's
Paul
time.
A lot, Cam. Give Paul a chance. Last week we had Andrew Turner and we talked a lot about like what he was an expert in. Well, we haven't really talked a ton about fermentation, the importance of temperature and time and what it entails. Like, a lot of people know about brewing a beer, right? You got to extract sugar, you got to, you know, hit certain numbers, and that's how you get the flavors and the color. But this is the important part where you're actually turning it into beer. You're adding yeast,
right?
And take us through kind of that process and what you think the most important parts of fermentation are.
Yeah, I think understanding the limits of the yeast you're using. Like, I mean, the simplest way most people break it down is you have ale yeast, you have lager yeast. So, you know, ale yeast, warmer fermenting, top fermenting, lager yeast, colder fermenting, lower fermenting in the vessel. And that's a broad guideline, but then, you know, you have to speak with your yeast lab and understand what each yeast can do for you. So we know certain yeasts we can push hotter and faster and turn beers a little faster. And then, of course, we give our lagers a bit more time because they're colder and slower. And it's just about keeping an eye on that fermentation, you know, how quickly those sugars are being eaten and hitting your timings.
Now note taking's obviously an important part of this, right?
Totally.
Otherwise, you know, what we want, even as craft brewers, I know it's fun to use different products and stuff, but we want a consistent product. And you're not going to get consistency, if you're not keeping records. You know, what's your system with that look like?
I'm a big fan of Ecos, the software for breweries. I've got the app on my cell phone. I can walk around the cellar and plug in my gravities for the days and my temperatures each day. And I have a history there. I can look in the backlog. I can see, okay, this beer took 2 weeks to finish up, and I have my expectations set before we even pitch the yeast.
As far as yeast goes, I mean, you guys brought two lagers, you brought a milk stout, a hazy IPA, and a sour here that we have out, and the barrel-aged, but we're not going to talk about that for fermentation purposes. Mm-hmm. How many different yeasts do you guys have going at any given time in-house?
Four or five, usually. Like we've
that's
definitely
a lot
got
to keep track of.
Yeah, yeah, and we've got some house strains that are pretty steady. You know, we've got the particular yeast we use for our hazy IPAs, and we might have two separate generations of that running at any given time. So we can, you know, pump out two cans every week if we need to.
Right.
We get a lot of work out of USO5 on a lot of our beers too. Just a simple dry USO5, you know, Chico derivative,
which is for people who aren't in the industry.
Yeah, so like it came from West Coast IPAs, mm-hmm. but we use it in our kettle sours, in our West Coasts, in some of our stouts. It's just a really nice all-purpose yeast.
Yeah, so my point in that is, you know, not everybody runs a boring old lager-only brewery where we can enjoy having one yeast strain. Mm-hmm. But you guys have multiple. It's a lot to keep up with. Do you guys do any hefs? Have you done one?
We've done one in the last year. Yeah, we just bought a fresh pitch and like tried it out.
Yeah, I got you. I mean, but there are so many yeast-driven beers out there, mm-hmm. that I don't think people really pay attention to. They don't know. They know hops, right? They know malts because you can see color, you can taste different flavors. But yeast, I don't think people really know a whole lot about that process of fermentation, how important that yeast is. You're not going to make a Hefeweizen with a lager yeast, or you know, what you're using for your hazy, or, you know, they all have specific purposes.
Yeah, and there's some that are a little more versatile, like I was talking about with the USO5, and then there's some, you know, with our hazies, we've picked a particular yeast that we love, and for me, it's one third of that formula in a hazy IPA. You know, you have to have your grist right, you have to have the right yeast, and just the pounds per barrel of hops is also really important.
By grist, we're talking malt, we're talking, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, one of those four main ingredients, the other being water. All right, well, let's get to the beers, because I think we've put enough of the non-beer nerds to sleep now. first thing we opened up was High Time, your Vienna Lager.
Which was excellent, by the way.
It's delicious. Thank you. Still nursing it, because I wanted to talk about it.
It was quite the jump to go to this ultraviolet from
Vienna
Lager to
big palate shock there.
Wow, Joe. All right, so the Vienna, what do we need to know about this one?
So that was our attempt at just a very clean, traditional German-style Vienna. Obviously, a Vienna malt, a little bit of Munich and Pilsner as well. It's just a very nice, light amber color. Mm-hmm. I would say for a lager, it's medium-bodied. You know, it's It's not too dry, but it's not too flabby. Like there's just enough malt sweetness there.
Flabby.
It's not. So we're saying it's got a little bit of a dad bod.
Yeah,
saying.
Totally. Gotcha. Yeah, yeah. He's right. Rocking the dad bod.
Perfect. It's my kind of beer. I'm with it.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, I love a Vienna lager.
Yeah, it's probably my favorite style.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I like it. It's 4.8%. You can have, this is what we call sessionable.
Indeed. Stop.
And you can have multiple. It's delicious.
I hear sessionable. I just mean, can I crush it?
Well, you know, we talk about, yes, you
okay.
can crush it.
All right, that's all I was wondering.
We talk about, I don't want to say pigeonholed, but, you know, the past couple weeks, you know, what, we had Rusty on a few weeks ago with yep. OSB.
Yep.
Sours and IPAs. I think it's the same kind of like Hopfly is known for hazy IPAs.
Oh, right.
And fruited sours. But I think they do a great job with lagers. Crunch Time is your just standard. What do you call that? It's not a light lager. It's just,
it says lager on the can, but I think we sort of call it like a contemporary American Pilsner.
Yeah, it's an outstanding, refreshing lager. Your Vienna is great. Any lager I've ever had from you guys has been really well made, really delicious.
But to Adam's point about what you guys do, and I went to the Ultraviolet, this is a juicy boy.
Oh, yeah.
B-O-I.
Woo! So, yeah, it was a little bit of a palate change there for me. But so why these IPAs?
I just pour it and look at it. It puts me in a bad mood.
Yeah, I was gonna say like when I poured that thing in, I'm like, oh, this bad boy is juicy. So anyway, why this style when you guys started up Hopfly, Cam? Why was this the thing that? Because I mean, some could argue that this might have been a fad or whatever it is, but you guys have stuck with this, and these guys are known for, and this is very, very good.
Cool, thank you for that. You know, it's funny when, as our name would suggest, we always started. We started Hopfly with the intention of brewing very hop-forward beers. Mm-hmm. And back, you know, 3.5 years ago when we were still planning it out, that the kind of haze craze was, you know, really just on the beginnings of the upswing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's something that we've just layered into our portfolio. I think what is important on the production side of things is we love brewing these beers.
Okay.
I mean, they are fun, they are challenging, and there's no German textbook that's going to tell you how to do it. So we've spent 3 years, you know, process optimization, trying new things, like figuring out how to do it in the best possible way. So, I mean, that's, you know,
well, you
that's
mentioned trying
fun.
New things. And I guess I noticed on the can on this particular beer, it's part of a series. So what are you, what is this series? What are you trying to accomplish with the series?
Yeah. So we, you know, it was a way for us to just kind of combine the marketing side of the beer, which is we need to create a coherent, you know, front for like what these beers are going
sure.
to be. But on the production side of things, you know, we're very intentional with what we do. So, you know, we had the floral series earlier in 2020, and that was really an exploration into Southern Hemisphere hops. So that entire series was focused on very floral, fruit forward hops from Australia and New Zealand. Watercolor series, we basically said, okay, we're getting, you know, some of these beers are a little too astringent. They have a little bit too much of a bite. You know, this is kind of an exploration into water chemistry and softer hops yielding basically the softest IPA that we can possibly do. So it's really just a way for us, you know, as we sit here in the brewery and tinker with all these little bits and bobs of the recipe, trying to think of a coherent way to try to tell that story to the customer. Like, we're not just releasing, you know, 8 new IPAs this month. It's like, no, there's actually, you know, there is a purpose behind it. This is what we're trying to do. And we try to articulate that through the, you know, through the labels and through social media so that people kind of know what they're getting.
Well, with this particular beer, from the moment I opened it, it, like, even the aroma gets you, like, right off the bat. Like, it's not playing around. So, what all is in this?
What do you taste? What do you taste?
Well, with me, I will fully admit that when it comes to these types of beers, not that they all taste the same, but to me, it is, trying to find the right way to put it. How closely does this resemble drinking
fruit juice?
Right. That's again. I do not have a very robust palate when it comes to hazy IPAs or these kind of juice bombs, as people would say.
So and I wasn't giving you a hard time.
You're not giving me a hard time.
I was just asking, like,
my question. Usually for me, it's just, all right, how closely does this resemble some sort of like fruit juice or whatever it is, but also retaining its beer? this balances that, in my opinion. I'm not quite sure what exactly it reminds me of, but I know I'm drinking a beer, not just something that is orange juice or grapefruit juice, for that matter. So this is my weird way of complimenting the beer because, again, I have a hard time articulating what it is about juicy IPAs and all the beer drinking. And all the years that I've been doing this podcast, I still have a hard time processing like why I won't like one or why I do like one, sure, except for now, and then I'm trying to articulate it in the weirdest way possible.
So yeah.
Don't give me grapefruit juice. Give me beer that has those characteristics. I just don't want grapefruit juice.
Yeah, anyway. Well, you know, Cam's talking about soft IPAs, and that's always my biggest complaint with a hazy, with somebody trying to make one, and I don't want something that's just so one-dimensionally soft and it's got a great aroma, then you taste and it's just all like almost fuzzy or like sludgy, not clean at all. There's nothing to balance it, no acidity, no bitterness to kind of balance it and make it more of, you know, well-rounded, if there is such a thing as, and I think there is a well-rounded New England IPA. And I've always, if I'm going to drink one, it's going to be one of yours or a few others that do them well or do them in a way where I will have one. Mm-hmm. It's just not my favorite style. You know, we talk about this all the time. No, I enjoy this, and the reason I enjoy it is because of the flavors I get from it. And that's why I asked you kind of what you taste.
I get beer mosa.
Or what you appreciate, what you like from it.
My usual threshold is this a good beer mosa or not?
This has like mimosa qualities to me.
And this is a good beer mosa.
This is like a, like I get pineapple and I get some citrus, mm-hmm, and it's balanced and it's not just that soft all aroma, all just dry hop stuff.
Right. And that's something, I mean, we definitely strive for. I mean, we think regardless of the style, there has to be balance to it. Mm-hmm. And it's always balancing what are the, you know, like I said, you know, hops can be astringent. Mm-hmm. Hops can be just bitter. What are you doing to balance that out with, you know, residual sugar, additional protein in the grist that's going to carry through for body? Like, how can you create that balance so that you can get the good pieces of the hops without letting the bad pieces of the hops overwhelm the beer? And I mean, Paul could talk to you for days about this, but, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to temperatures, timing, and quality of raw ingredient.
Let's actually talk about temperatures. I'm curious about that from a nerdy perspective, Paul.
Sure.
Because, you know, look, I think most people would recognize that beer's profile will change depending on the temperature at which you drink it.
Absolutely. Right?
So how does that play into the making of a beer? So when it has to be cold, it has to be the right temperature. What does that mean for an average person?
So hops do things at different temperatures, mm-hmm, right? Like in the kettle, you put hops in very early, you're going to be isomerizing those acids, making the beer bitter, right?
Taking me back to some old AP science classes. All right, let's go.
With a hazy, you know, you want to delay the use of those hops till much later in the brewing process, usually after the boil in the whirlpool. You bring the temperature down, then you add your hops. So you're only pulling those oils and those aromatics without scorching them, essentially, and making the beer bitter. But then also dry hop timing, temperature is important. If you dry hop too cold, you're going to be pulling astringent, grassy, oniony, awful flavors out of the hop. So you have to do it when it's still warm. You don't want to, I've definitely had some grassy.
Have you had an oniony beer before?
Absolutely.
And there's also certain hops that really lend themselves toward those garlic and onion flavors.
Yep, totally.
But anyway, what you were saying, like, so when do you guys... Dry hopping is a huge part of a New England IPA style. Mm-hmm. So what does your hopping schedule look like?
We've played around with it a lot over the years, actually, and the processes therein. But what we've settled on is in fermentation, but towards the end. We had been playing around with a small dose early on, but felt like the mess that usually created from, you know, beer blowing out the top because, you know, you're making
we kind of touched on it last week with Andrew.
Yeah.
Because they do some in fermentation hopping. What's the danger of that? For people who don't know, people who've never seen those videos we all cringe at on like Worst Beer Blog or whatever, when people are just watching from the tap room and a beer is, you know, spewing out the top of the, fermenter and everybody's just watching it. Why does that happen? What is the danger there?
Well, you know, it's what we lovingly call in the industry a hop volcano. and yeast are creating not just alcohol, but also CO2 in your beverage. And in a mostly sealed vessel, you know, you have your airlock, but there's still a little bit of pressure. Some of that CO2 is dissolving into the liquid under that pressure. And the hops, these dry hop pellets that you're dumping in, are creating these nucleation points for that CO2 to then escape from the liquid, sometimes very violently.
You ever pour Mentos in a Coke bottle?
it's exactly like that. I mean, yeah. I've had volcanoes hit the ceiling. I have been fully doused by one. Was very surprised.
As long as you can get the lid back on, man.
Yes, it's very important that you get the lid back on and open those blow-off arms. But it can be scary and messy and frustrating. So
you can lose a lot of product. And with the amount of hops and the quality and type of hops you guys are using, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, and not just product, but the healthy yeast, right? You're potentially shooting that yeast, which is fermenting on top, right out of the vessel, and then your fermentation stalls out because you just screwed it up.
So how do you avoid that? You just hit a certain point, you hit a certain number, and that's kind of when you hit that kind of green zone.
I check my gravity.
Dry hop.
Yep, I have a window that I like to do my dry hopping, and I found that the beer is usually a little more calm at that point. I'm less likely to have a big volcano.
Have you seen any of those videos, Joe?
No, I have not. This is all new to me.
We'll have to send you one.
Yeah, please send me one. I'm like, what are you talking about?
It will stop your heart if you are in the industry, because you just feel for those guys that have that problem, because you're literally just watching money like
just
wash away.
Light it on fire.
I mean,
The Joker's out here just saying some people just want to watch the world burn.
The world burn, man. Yeah. And the worst is when it's somebody usually sitting in the tap room and you've got like glass windows into the brewery shows the fermenters and everybody's just standing around watching. Oh, somebody's recording on their phone.
Is this part of the show? Is this cool. Is it like going to Benihana's?
It'll smell good in that brewery, but that's a lot of cleanup.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Yeah.
All right, so you have a couple other ones here. You've had the Razzle Dazzle, and actually, let's talk about the bottle. The bottle intrigues me. The bottle's been...
Can't we, like, get to all of them?
I mean...
I want to talk about this Razzle Dazzle first.
Well, I mean...
This is a great fruited sour.
Yeah, we can do Razzle Dazzle first.
Okay, fine. The bottle's sexy, though.
Well, so's the can.
I'm just saying.
That bottle is sharp.
It's a good-looking bottle. All right, let's talk Razzle Dazzle before we get to this barrel age.
Yeah, one of our heavily fruited kettle sours, all raspberry. So as Cam was saying earlier, we have played around with more or less sugars in these beers, but we do like to ferment everything out.
Why is that? What problems happen there if you don't?
Yeah. I mean, cans can explode. Like, you're leaving sugars and some amount of yeast in a can. Those cans get warm.
Fruited sours are known for that.
Yeah, you see it on the meme accounts, all over social media.
You do. There are.
And people still buy them, you know? Like, and I'm not knocking anyone who's working that angle, but it's just not something we want to do.
People will buy them. The problem is if they don't have shelf stability, they leave your tap room and it's out of your control.
Yeah.
So you guys avoid that by fermenting your sugars out.
Yeah, and we sell to a lot of bottle shops, and you know, I wish all of our bottle shops could have nothing but refrigeration, but we know they're going to be on a shelf.
Don't we all?
Yeah, so we try to make it easy for those people and safe for our customers.
All right, so what's the science behind this? Because you're taking out sugar, but this is still a very sweet beer.
Yeah.
To me it is. And now I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. So how do you pull that off?
That's really sweet, man. It's cool.
No, it's not like the Netflix, the history of curse words, where I want to go, you know, like that's the, that's not what I'm saying.
I mean, we
there's still I can still taste
sweetness.
The fruit.
Yeah, that fruit
there's
is
still
sweetness.
There's still a sweetness to it.
Yeah, we've got some processes that retain some of those fruit aromatics, but also, we leave unfermentable malt sugars in there, purposefully, and we use a little bit of lactose too to fill out the body and add some residual sweetness.
Gotcha. So you guys did one back in the summer. You did the lemonade series, which was outstanding, but didn't you do one, Cam? Didn't we have one together either last summer or last year? you guys did one where you shot some lactose in it, and it was a really, it was almost like a dessert, like a cheesecake almost.
Yeah, we actually experimented with pasteurizing our sours. Okay. So we kind of said, like Paul said, we don't want to throw anything out to the market that could be a delayed timer bomb.
Sure.
But we actually have access to a pasteurizer. So we said, if we're going to do it, we're going to try to do it right and still make it shelf stable.
So, can you explain that process?
Yeah. So basically
how do you pasteurize beer?
There's a couple ways, but you know, it's basically kind of like you pasteurize milk.
What is pasteurization?
Pasteurization is,
there's a lot of people who don't know what pasteurization is, and I'm not taking cracks at them. This is an important thing.
For sure.
Most local craft beer is not pasteurized.
Right. And pasteurization is really just taking our product to a temperature range. It's going to kill both, you know, intentionally occurring yeast cells, but also maybe any nefarious bacteria or anything that would be in that product. So you're just zapping it. It's like when you boil a pot of water, you kill everything in it. If we take our product to 170 degrees and hold it for 20 minutes, you know, we're definitely killing everything. So it's something, you know, you can flash pasteurize at boiling temperature. The lower in temp you get, the longer you have to hold something there to kill off all the, you know, anything nasty that might be happening. So we did about a year and a half ago, we played around with some sweet sours, you know, kind of like what you see in the market with these super overly fruited things. We just said, if we're going to do it, we're going to pasteurize it.
Gotcha.
And honestly, I don't know. At least for me personally, I think it took a little bit of the fun out of it. Just throwing all this crap in and pasteurizing it, it started to not feel like beer.
Were you having any flavor issues? Was it changing the flavors at all?
No, you know, we were really worried. We thought we'd get, you know, maybe some caramelization of sugars and some flavor degradation, aroma degradation. We saw like very, very, very little. We did a lot of kind of blind A/B testing.
Okay.
And honestly didn't see it. So, it worked. The pasteurization, you know, that process worked great for us. We just leaned away from that style of beer.
Gotcha. But you are using lactose in some of your fruited sours. I mean, clearly this one has a little bit. But I'm talking about, we had one, and I wish I could remember it, but we had one that was much more.
I think that was our pina colada inspired. Potentially, or
no, you did your apple. It was your apple crisp.
Oh, the apple crisp. Oh, was that?
That's what it was.
Yes, that's what it was.
That is what it was.
It was so good.
Yeah, you did bring the apple crisp, and I was very much like, "Holy crap!" Good.
And that's just full of fruit sugars.
Yeah,
that's basically.
There's no lactose in that one.
I don't believe we did that.
Oh, really?
One, but you have so much
it
sugar.
Had so much extra sugar.
But you have so much left over. So much left over from the fruit that you know, even if there was lactose, you wouldn't know it was there because of the sheer amount of fruit sugars.
Really, all that sweetness really balanced out the tartness of the kettle sour.
Yeah.
Now this one, we talked a lot about kettle sours last week. We don't really need to go into depth on that one. But how long is your process dropping your pH?
For us, it's usually an over weekend thing.
Okay.
It's like
a 48-hour.
Yeah. So it's the batch that gets started on Friday and knocked out on Monday, and it usually usually hits its pH.
Yeah, so for those who don't know what we're talking about, listen to last week's podcast with Andrew Turner.
Oh, that was some nerd stuff.
And it will catch you up on how pH works with
some
sour beer
stuff.
All right, let's open this
sexy bottle.
Big sexy bottle.
All right, so
500 milliliter.
The podcast is not a visual medium, so it is what it is. But you guys went with a minimalist approach on this. This is a barrel-aged stout, right?
It is.
Okay, so you guys went with a very plain is wrong word to use, but a very simple,
clean
label with your Hot Fly logo on it. The bottle is like matte black,
like a powder coat almost.
Yeah. So where'd you get these? Not to give away industry secrets, but where'd you get these bottles from, man?
There's a bottle supplier in Quebec that sells these.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. It's like I said, it's sexy.
It's a pretty.
So
bottle.
All right. So you guys are now doing with Rocky Mount Mills. How are you guys doing, or how did you guys start barrel aging?
We just carved out a space in our production facility to put
some
barrel racks.
Thought it weighs like 5 pounds. Wait, I got to talk about this.
What?
Oh my gosh, pick that thing up.
Holy crap, guys. This bottle is ridiculous.
I don't even think there's beer left for you, Joe. It's just a heavy bottle.
It's just a heavy bottle.
I think the glass weighs as much as the beer in it.
That's amazing.
It's like 50-50 on the
weight. I love it.
It is.
I love it.
All right, anyway, sorry. Back to the question.
So when did you start?
Oh my gosh.
with the barrel aging?
It was last year. So,
where'd you guys get the? You guys have like the connect on the barrels?
Yeah, one of the barrel brokers out there that'll sell you.
Okay,
you know they coordinate with the distillers and, gotcha. And everyone. Yeah.
And when people, this is one of these things that I think people might not realize. You know, do you get to select what barrels you want, or do you just kind of like get the mystery box and you just like, all right, well, this is a barrel that had whatever.
Thankfully, we get to select. Okay. At the time you go to order, you know, your sales rep will send you a list of the available mm-hmm. things that they have or the things that are about to become available.
Okay.
So the distillers will let them know, hey, we're sending you, you know, this many, you know, Heaven Hill or whatever.
And, gotcha.
And that's what they've got.
Okay.
What did you guys use for these?
So it was a mixture of barrels. We used some Woodford Reserve. And then we also used some Heaven Hill barrels that had been used to age maple syrup.
Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
So they were,
okay.
They were freshly
that
emptied
explains
up.
Some of that aroma now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is like.
I was going to say, I finally took a whiff and yeah, I can. Yeah.
My 10-year-old Max is going through like a big time fudge bar thing. Like every time we go to the grocery store, pick up fudge bars. Like the ice cream like
yeah,
fudge
no,
bar.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So I'm smelling a lot of fudge bars at home.
Mm,
and like as soon as I picked this up, I was like, oh my gosh, this smells like one of Max's popsicles. But that maple syrup really starts coming through.
For sure. My
kids especially are once you set it. I have not tasted it yet. Joe, you tasted it?
Yeah, no, it's excellent.
Yeah, so this has
got
the,
some viscosity to it.
It
huh?
does.
And that's it's a very like thick them. Beer, and this is the vanilla variant.
Thick with two C's.
Mm. Might be a third one in there.
Mm.
So
yeah,
you
can,
did.
I can pick up on the vanilla.
How many variants did you do?
So we had the base and three variants, so four bottles.
What were the three variants besides vanilla?
So we have a coffee one where we use some counterculture hologram.
Nice. Oh, that's. Dude, time right. out. Did you all see Fauna Flora? When they Fauna Flora did a hologram coffee four pack? Like hologram, I forget what the beer was, mm-hmm. but it looked like the purple bag. The cans looked like the hologram bag, and they called it hologram.
nice.
And it was beautiful. And I was like, that's my coffee. I don't even remember if I got
typically,
the beer.
Yeah, that's typically what we drink is we drink counterculture, although I mixed it up for some reason. I got the big trouble the last time I picked up some coffee.
Counterculture yeah. hologram is my, we have it at the house all the time.
Yeah.
We have an Imperial stout we've put out pretty regularly. That's a coffee stout called Big, Big Trouble.
Where oh, okay.
We
nice.
We use their Big Trouble.
And you use the Big
it,
Trouble.
So.
Very
so
nice.
So vanilla coffee, and then what's the third?
So that one is chocolate and cinnamon. So we used some nibs from Vidari out okay. of Raleigh nice. And some Ceylon cinnamon, which is like a, has like a heat to it almost.
Yeah. So a lot nice. Of the bottle intrigued me because it's not like breweries are putting out bottles as much as they used to. I mean, you know, back when we started doing this podcast, a lot of the stuff came in these, in this format. So why did you want to do this in this presentation?
I think there's just such like a value added, like fancy, like aspect to it. You know, you do want to charge a little more for a beer like this, whether it's in a can or a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And not to sound shrewd, but I think when people,
if I'm going to be dropping money, I want to get something that looks
yeah,
good.
Yeah, you know, right. when you want to give someone a gift,
yeah.
like it looks much nicer when it's in that presentation of a yep. bottle with a fancy label than yep. an aluminum can. Like, I love cans, but they just don't have that feel to them.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is a beautiful bottle and label. Just really, really nice. It's called First Light. This says vanilla. Now, are all the labels the same and you just changed what the contents are? Or,
yeah, so it's
or
four different color schemes.
Four like different
the,
colors.
The,
on,
okay. the background color changes for each one.
Yeah, well, great job. Great job is always on packaging. Packaging is something that always I admire about you guys. You do a nice job of that. And obviously the beer is
Thank
always.
You.
Well, the beer is great.
Always great.
What else do we have as we have to start wrapping things up here?
I was going to get there. Like,
what?
Rand's going to be like, does Joe always talk over you during the podcast, Adam?
No, it's the other way around.
I was getting to that.
It's the other way around. Because you also know this one's not going to be on the radio show, so
oh
yeah, we did.
I'll call in.
We did a segment one time. I forgot why. What were we talking about? Oh, we were talking. Oh, I know what. I remember what it was. We were talking to Mother Earth. Anyway, once I let it
be known that this was going to be on the Fan.
I don't even remember that being known.
Adam just was like all over it. I'm like, my
drooling
God,
all over the microphone.
I've never heard you talk this much. This is wild to me.
That's
but anyway,
untrue.
So, what else can people look forward to from Hopfly? What should they be on the lookout for other than all these wonderful beers that we've already had?
Well, I think our timing's pretty good here because we're recording this on the 20th of January.
Yep.
And tomorrow, the 21st, we release these bottles.
Okay.
So they're still available for pre-sale on our website, but they'll be available through our tap room only, walk-in purchase.
Gotcha.
Tomorrow.
Well, I highly recommend, and it's always worth it to go out to Rocky Mountain anyway. They got good stuff out there. So what's next? What are you guys looking forward to? I would imagine that you have, with the tap room, dealt with cold weather, lack of crowd, so to speak. So this is a lot of like, let's get to spring, let's get these vaccinations going. People start coming back out to Rocky Mount.
Yeah, kind of just batting down the hatches for the next few months. But, you know, like I said, to kind of start off, this whole time period has given us a lot of time to just focus on the product and focus on the business. And we're at a point now where, you know, heading into the new year, our lager program is something we really want to continue to evolve and develop further and really, you know, just make it better. I mean, you know, it just takes reps, right?
Yeah.
Like we release multiple IPAs every week, and that has given us the creativity and ability to try new things. So really, you know, really kind of pushing the lager program in this new year and just kind of getting excited and geared up to give customers that taproom experience that you know, we hoped would happen last year, but we're really going to look forward to pushing that this year, whether it's, you know, summer, fall, whenever okay. It can happen safely, we can't wait to have folks in.
Yeah, it's been interesting. And it's been a frequent topic on the podcast now that things have gotten cold. I actually don't mind going out to breweries with, just bundle up, you know?
Yeah.
The crowds aren't necessarily all that bad. They're still making, you know, breweries are making new stuff all the time, so it's still fun to go out there. And actually, funny thing about it being cold, I have not had stouts in a really long time. I just haven't. Like, it hasn't been a thing that I've been all that interested in. But now that I've been drinking more outside at breweries in the cold, I'm like, well, I need something with a little bit more heft to it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not that a stout's going to warm you up, so to speak, but it's like it completely changes your general attitude of what you want to drink.
Totally.
I don't really want to drink some sort of, you know, what I would associate. I was at a brewery the other day, and they had, like, some sort of, you know, lime beer. I'm like, no, it's 45 degrees outside. I don't want to have what I associate as a summer beer when I'm like all bundled up. So I moved over to the stout and I was satisfied with that. So this is excellent. I would love to have this outside in the cold, all nice and bundled up with my jacket and everything else with multiple layers. So availability here in the Triangle. I know you mentioned with this Barrel Edge series, it's going to be at the tap room only, but you guys are readily available throughout the Triangle, right?
Yeah. We have a wonderful network of bottle shops that we get to out here, and we're out making deliveries every week.
Okay.
We do our best to focus on, you know, small independent bottle shops and, you know, delivering a high level of service to them. And, you know, over the last year, we've been able to make a little bit of gains as far as availability. So.
Okay.
You know, I'd say if you're in the Raleigh-Durham area, hit up your local bottle shop and you're pretty likely to find some Hopfly on the shelf.
Very cool. Including a place like, House of Hops, which sponsors the 919 Beer podcast. Go check out their locations. Two in Raleigh, one in Pittsburgh.
Did I ever tell you about the ping pong tournament I ran at the one in Pittsburgh?
No.
Yeah, it was fun.
You say that sarcastically.
No, it was fun.
It was actually fun?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know how I like to do characters when we're not in a pandemic.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
Stupid stuff.
That's true.
Got the. I was kind of like a Jackie Moon as a ping pong master.
I tried to do the same thing.
I got
thing.
Ousted in the first round. But back in the day, I don't think they do them right now. But
in the before times.
In the before times. When the maskless masses roamed the earth.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would do a weekly, like Wednesday or Thursday. Ping pong tournament.
Nice.
Yeah, out at
Oh, I just remember when Kerry was hosting like the ping pong nationals or something like that a few years ago, and they did this big thing where they tried to get all the media involved. It was a media ping pong tournament. I got crushed. I don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah, Forrest Gump, I am not.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. So shout out to House of Hops. Go check them out at their three locations, two in Raleigh, one in Pittsburgh. And maybe when we get into the after the before times, we can bring back that ping pong tournament.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do one.
Maybe we can do one out there.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. That definitely would be a lot of fun. Guys, thanks for hanging out.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
What do we got coming up next week?
So next week, there, and actually, Cam, you guys are involved. There is a little like a virtual festival.
Yeah.
With the guys from 90 Second Beer Review.
Yeah, the Pints of Love.
Yeah, the Pints of Love. We're going to talk a little bit about that.
Okay, cool.
With a phone call. And then our buddy Ken O'Berry from Vicious Fishes is going to come back. He hadn't been in for a while. So
it has been a while. I was going to say that was one of the last on-location beer podcasts that we did, actually, now that I think about it.
Did we?
Yeah, we went out to Vicious. You, I don't think you were involved with that one.
We went to the one in Fuquay. Mm-hmm. Like, you mean last on location, like paid spots NC Beer Month a few years ago. Yeah, it was a couple years ago.
In the before times.
This is before times, yeah. But we're going to catch up. They have a new Apex location that they opened back in the summer, but that's kind of in full swing now.
Yeah, that was the Apex location that was like a long time coming, but now it's in full swing. So
So we'll catch up with Ken.
All right. Well, reminder, you can check out other 919 Beer podcasts with all the other breweries that we've talked to if you miss any of these. A lot of fun conversations taking place. So go check those out. It's 2021. We're all about positive vibes.
Positive vibes.
Positive vibes only in 2021, which means
positive vibes.
Five stars only. Be nice. Give us five stars. We'll see y'all next week.
Cheers.
You've been listening to the 919 Beer Podcast with hosts Joe Ovius, Adam Eshbaugh, and Wayne Holt. Don't forget, there are many ways you can listen to this podcast, including streaming at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app. And you can also subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and TuneIn. This podcast also airs Saturday mornings at 8 on Buzz Sports Radio. Thanks again for listening to the 919 Beer Podcast.